listener-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 30th of April, Anno Domini 2011, and you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use, things to choose, nothing to lose. Would you plug me in, please, because my computer is complaining. Thank you
but
so much.
First? We got tough folks?
We're done. We want to. We really, really seriously, as you know, for the past, I don't know what, year, we've been begging for money,
like
and we're done. And we want to thank all those of you who were kind and generous enough to step up and become members of the Soundbites family. I can't begin to tell you how much we appreciate it. It's you people who keep this station, it's you people who keep this show on the air. And, without you, there's just silence. So, as you know, we've said it a million times, the only money we get is from you folks. So we want to thank you so much for your generosity. It keeps this station running for another half a year, and we're very, very, very appreciative. Thank you all.
That was, Rob, I, Linda, Joel, and Derek, and Gary O were here last night just to get that last bit. And again, the folks were phenomenal. You know, it's our great listeners that wanted, you know, to keep us on the air and keep going. And they stepped up to the plate and showed their what they're made of.
Can't argue with it. They did a great job, and we're very, very grateful. All right, news of the week. We're going to start with my favorite news item of the week. Barnes & Noble announced it has released the long-awaited Nook Color 1.2 software update on Wednesday. The update brings Android 2.2 Froyo and Flash 10.1, along with Barnes & Noble's Nook-specific app shop, loaded with 125 of the most sought-after apps. At $249, the 7-inch Android device may be one of the best values in a tablet device. The Nook Color has always been positioned primarily as a reading device enhanced with a full-color screen. It's smaller and lighter than an iPad, but slightly bulkier than a Kindle. While the screen isn't as sharp as typical e-ink displays, it has a respectable 169 pixels per inch density. It's backlit, and it doesn't suffer from the dreaded page-turning lag. If you want a small web tablet, the Nook is obviously superior to the Kindle, and at half the price is easier on the wallet than an iPad. The updated software further enhances that experience with apps specifically developed for the Nook Color, including Pandora, Angry Birds, Epicurious, and more. Barnes & Noble has also built in a full-fledged email client compatible with any IMAP or POP account. Taking full advantage of the device's color LCD display, the Nook Color users can also view Flash video as well as hundreds of enhanced interactive books with audio and video content. Unlike other Android devices, the Nook Color can't access the Android marketplace. Instead, Barnes & Noble offers its own app shop, where users can buy apps specifically developed for the Nook using a special SDK. Barnes & Noble isn't trying to build the largest selection of apps, but rather to build a well-curated selection of high-quality apps in an easy-to-access way. As a result of the Froyo update, the Nook Color's web browsing experience has been enhanced. In addition to numerous improvements to the underlying WebKit engine, the browser also has, for better or worse, integration with Adobe Flash 10.1. While Barnes & Noble representatives repeatedly discussed using Flash for video, it can access and render all types of Flash content. The Nook, so all those sites you can't get to with an iPad, one at least, you can now get to with a Nook Color for only $250. The Nook Color is designed to primarily be a reading device, but the new software enhances bringing the most requested features of the tablet experience to the platform. The Nook Color 2.1 update is available via manual download now, though Barnes & Noble will be rolling it out automatically in the next few weeks. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is Nook Color's Android update. And the choices are, tempts me, I've already got my Nook Color, I prefer my Kindle, I prefer my iPad, could not care less. And at the moment, with 39 votes in. Those of you who could barely read the poll said could not care less. Those of you, I'll just say, followed by tempts me, I prefer my Kindle, I prefer my iPad. I've already got my Nook Color. I'm the only one who voted for that. I prefer my Android tablet. One person voted for that. So once you voted, now I know you'll have more to say because at least those of you who actually care. You can click in the little yellow box underneath the poll. Click on Give Us Your Opinion. It will take you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
And the question, of course, is what do you think of the Nook Color as a $250 Android tablet? And that's our question to you. Are you tempted? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 585-966-5299 or toll free, 1-800-790-0415. That's 1-800-790-0415. And I'll tell you, I have one and I love it. I haven't got the update yet, but I do have a chip that lets me reboot into Honeycomb. And as a Honeycomb tablet, it's a little slow because it's all running off of the mini SD card as opposed to I didn't actually root the tablet. But man, I love it. It's everything I said in the news article is true. It's so much easier to carry around. It's so light. It's so fast. It's so responsive. The web experience is unbelievable. And so when what I really want to do is surf the web, and I'm really looking forward to the email app and a couple of other things. But with all of that, I have an awfully good web experience on a slightly smaller scale than an iPad, both in price and in power. But it only cost me $250. So that really is a pretty good deal. I'm very impressed by it. If you're looking for a tablet mostly to do web stuff with, check it out. It's certainly, you know, it's certainly worth your time to spend 15 minutes at a Barnes & Noble looking at one. Wait a couple of weeks until they're sure they've got all the updates downloaded.
What did you say the price point was on that?
$249. Our people are not, for the most part, stupid, mm-hmm. so they will get the $249. It's really $250.
Yeah.
Well, you know, an iPad is $600. $500
for the base model.
Whatever, yeah. $500.
For
this
a 10-inch
is half
screen.
The price.
Yeah.
This is half the price. Yes, it's only a 7-inch screen, but that makes it easier to carry around, easier to fit in your mm-hmm. pocket. You know, it'll fit in my coat pocket.
There you go.
You know, if I ever wore a suit coat again, it would fit in the suit coat pocket, you know? Really, so you can... It's just much easier to carry around. And it works just freaking great. I'm also interested in the Asus EEE Pad Transformer TF101. God bless the people at Asus. They don't use short names for any of their products.
So you remember them.
The Asus EEE Pad Transformer TF101. It's a 10.1-inch tablet.
Is it related to the Mac? You know how the Macs usually always do?
Yeah, 10.47, left elbow 3, I know. The Asus tablet is like $400, mm-hmm. and for another $150, you buy a keyboard that you can lock it into and turn it into a laptop. Now, why would you spend $150 just for a keyboard? Because it also includes a battery that's the same size as the one in the pad. So instead of getting 9 hours or 8 hours of battery life, or 9 hours, whatever it is on the pad, you now double that when you plug it into the thing. And in fact, if you use it for 8 hours and then plug it in, it actually charges the battery in the thing. So
it's almost sort of the opposite of the Motorola Atrix,
right?
Which is a small cell phone you plug into a bigger screen.
Right. And I'm really looking forward to that. And that's $300 to $150, so that's $450. Still just slightly cheaper than the iPad. And it's the full Android experience. It's got the whole Tegra quad-core processor and all the other things, yada, yada, yada. So that's just another nice thing that I'm really interested in looking at. But we'll see.
So if any of those companies are listening, we'd be more than happy to take review units to discuss.
I'm going to let Jim tell you how to pronounce his
city.
Yeah, he's from New Hampshire.
All right, Jim, well, how do you pronounce your city? Jim, are you there? Oh, there you are, Jim. How do you pronounce your city?
Nashua.
Nashua.
Nashua. That's the only city I know in New Hampshire.
Sure, you've called before. What can we do for you today,
Nashua,
Jim?
New Hampshire.
What can we do for you today? What's that noise in the background? Do you have the radio on? What
can we do for you today? There we go.
There you go.
Nick, LibreOffice?
Yes.
Yeah, I looked at it this morning. It opens up open office stuff fine. I don't know about stuff from Microsoft, though.
Yeah, it should. I actually opened a document yesterday. What Jim is talking about is what we talked about in Second Life last night. The new version of Ubuntu 11.04 comes with LibreOffice, not OpenOffice. What happened was OpenOffice, of course, owned by Sun. At some point, there were shenanigans. The open source community called shenanigans on
shenanigans. Get your pitchforks.
What?
Get your pitchforks and brooms.
Get your pitchforks and brooms. So they forked with an R, OpenOffice to LibreOffice, which is of course perfectly legal because it's an open source product. So the two are kind of running in tandem because Sun essentially said, "Yeah, we're not going to screw around with OpenOffice." But by that point, LibreOffice had sucked off most of the good programmers from OpenOffice. And there are some feature enhancements that are planned for LibreOffice that have not been mentioned at all for OpenOffice. So a number of the things, SUSE, which is what Jim is using, and Ubuntu, and I think, I don't know Red Hat, I have not looked. I have moved to LibreOffice, which is essentially the same thing. And of course,
there's also Mac and Windows versions as well.
Exactly.
Didn't Oracle mess up OpenOffice a bit too when they bought Sun?
Yes.
Patent messes and.
Yeah, there were all kinds of patent messes because they also own StarOffice. Sun owns StarOffice, which is was the original product from which OpenOffice came. They open sourced the code.
That was their commercial product, right?
And that's their commercial product. So they were essentially working on crippling OpenOffice so that more people would spend. It's only $70, but spend the money for StarOffice. But for those of us who prefer the fully free and unencumbered by any digital restriction management stuff, we prefer OpenOffice. Now, LibreOffice. But yeah, it's a really nice product, Jim. It's free for Mac and Windows and Linux. It opens up every Word and PowerPoint and Excel document I've given it. Certainly, I have a problem with some fonts because I don't have those fonts on my machine, and that's the normal problem from one machine to another anyway.
Well, now Nick, there's a cure for that.
Get the fonts.
Well, I got a dual boot and I got my Windows fonts on it, so that works for that.
Yes. And, I don't necessarily know that that's legal in some cases.
Well, I know, but a long time, years ago, you talked about that.
Yeah.
Controls are a little bit different on LibreOffice, too.
Yeah, they are.
It'll take a little while to get used to it.
Well, right, and that's just finger memory. You know, that really has, it's like I always say, it's like buying a new car. You still know how to drive, you just don't know where the radio is. And it's the same thing when you move to LibreOffice from Word or from Microsoft Office. It's the same thing if you download Ubuntu 11.04. They have the new Unity desktop instead of GNOME or KDE, although you can load those if you prefer. And it's just a matter of getting used to it. For a while, you feel clumsy, and then you never know there was a problem. I mean, when I first bought my car, I really, truly... If my wife and I were driving around, I would tell her, set the air conditioning or turn on the road. So I don't know where anything is. I'm not taking my eyes off the road. Now it's like, I don't even look. It's all fine.
That rule applies to most adults, but kids, they can find the radio right away.
The radio is instantaneous. The they know they where find. They know where the iPod dock is. They don't even bother with the radio.
Hooked up here. What are you doing? Never mind. Boom, they got their tunes on.
Yeah, we're going to pick up my daughter.
Same color, though.
What?
has the same color as Open Office.
Yes, it does. It does. It's, so far, they haven't changed a lot of that, although they're talking about rebranding it even more so that it is more distinctive.
LibreOffice is greenish,
isn't it?
Well, it will be.
There's LibreOffice's icons for each of the ones is round, and Open Office, the new ones are round, too.
Yep. Yep. Well, like I said, they haven't changed a lot of it yet because they first stabilized the fork, and now they'll start working on things.
Yeah. I still like OpenOffice better because it has more than Microsoft Office any day.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. It has more features and more capabilities. For years, I have been able to save things as a PDF without having to load a separate document or whatever. And there are some features that I can use in LibreOffice that are OpenOffice that just simply aren't available.
Yeah, I know. OpenOffice, you get all the features that Microsoft Office, you get all the features that LibreOffice or OpenOffice has. You have to get the expensive one, like about $700 or $800 for the corporate edition.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And all of that is free with LibreOffice. All right, Jim, thanks for your call. We got to take a break. We'll be back. And don't forget to tell all your friends in Nashua about our show. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. You are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here, supported by you, the Soundbites family, on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
I just want to listen to music for a minute. I love that. All right, welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Henry.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites.
What's the name of this song? I just downloaded Shazam last night on my iPad. I'm pretty sure they have versions for Android too.
Yeah, they do.
It listens to the music that's playing and then finds the name of the song and it lets you go and buy it if it can. A lot of TV shows have now incorporated Shazam, so it doesn't have to be the music during the TV show, even the dialogue during a TV show, and it pops up. I was doing that last night watching Being Human. Wow. And we finally watched the finale last night. The British finale was a lot different than the American finale.
I have not seen either.
And it knows the TV show, but I wanted the name of the song. It brought up the TV show for me.
Yeah, right.
There's a good one I saw coming on TNT, Fallen Sky.
Yeah, that looked interesting, too.
Yeah, that looks interesting with Nolan Wiley in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And what's the next loss that's coming up? You look at the commercial and you think, hell no.
I think that was Fallen from the Sky. Fallen Sky. No, that's not it.
I don't know.
Falling Sky?
Falling
maybe?
Sky, yeah.
When you say hell no, that reminds me of this comedian, Gabriel Iglesias. And they call him Fluffy.
Fluffy, I know.
Well,
Fluffy.
They came out with this new one.
He's got a whole shtick on Netflix now that you have.
Oh yeah,
Netflix. You can download his.
Well, he's got one routine which I have. I have the CD, the DVD on. And he goes. He normally had five levels of fluff, and he goes. Now he's got a new one. And he goes, he's going through it all, and he goes, and the final one is, hell no! And he's describing it, and he goes, let me explain. He goes, you know, you get on an elevator, and you get on there, and most of the folks are, you know, getting pretty crowded, and then this guy who is like 800 pounds comes running up to the elevator, and you're going, hell no! You're closing the door, pushing the feet, kicking him out.
All right, on to the news. Microsoft may still dominate the operating system market, but Linux and Apple's Mac OS platforms were the fastest growing in 2010, according to new data from Gartner. What's particularly interesting, though, is the rapid growth being shown by both Linux and Macs in the server and client operating system segments, respectively. On the client side, for instance, which as a whole grew 9.3% in 2010, Mac OS was the fastest growing subsegment in 2010, even though Windows was still the largest client OS player. Apple's platform grew 15.8%, fueled by what Gartner reports were strong sales of Mac desktops and laptops. Microsoft's Windows client business, by comparison, grew only 9.2%. Apple's making of Mac OS as a cool client, client computing OS, has attracted a group of loyal customers on Mac devices and platforms, Gartner explained. Apple's continuous innovations in mobile devices, such as smartphones and tablets, have prompted sales of other Apple devices and will continue to drive Mac sales. On the server side, meanwhile, which grew 5.7% last year, the open source Linux operating system was the fastest growing sub-segment in 2010 as end users adopted more open standard systems. Red Hat in particular has dominated the commercial Linux server market. Revenue from Red Hat Enterprise Linux, or RHEL, server licenses went up 18.6%, in fact, making a 52.8% share of the Linux server market. Microsoft Windows server business, by contrast, grew only 7.5% in 2010. The market has accepted Linux as a viable alternative to Unix and other proprietary OSs in mission-critical environments, Gartner wrote, explaining the operating system's strong showing last year. Indeed, hardly a week goes by without some fresh good news for Linux these days. Now that Natty Narwhal is out, I'll be watching closely to see what new gains are made. So our question to you, are you thinking about switching? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 585-966-5299 or toll free at 1-800-979-0415. I've got to stop doing that.
There was some.
Wait a minute. Let me give them the real numbers. 585-966-5299. Or, of course, toll free 1-800-790-0415. See, now I've given the real number and somebody called in or not.
There was some interesting.
They're probably still dialing double zero somewhere.
There's some interesting financial news with Apple and Microsoft this week, both issuing their quarterly statements. Apple passed Microsoft's market capitalization last year, which is the amount of their outstanding stock times their stock price. Recently, Apple beat their quarterly revenue, and in this previous quarter, Apple had beat Microsoft's quarterly income.
Right.
So now Apple is the second largest tech company. Well, it's the largest tech company and the second largest company in the U.S., only beneath ExxonMobil. And some people are starting to say that, does that mean we have to root for Microsoft as the underdog now?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, our next caller is Jim, who's calling from Webster. Welcome, Jim. What's your question?
Okay, my question is, I'm making a movie using an MSN Movie Maker. And when I put some music on it, I have to bring the music back just to work in the segments that I want it to. And quite often when I do that, it freezes. And then whatever I did up to that point, I lose.
Right.
Of course, now I've got to the point where I save it, you know, after every few minutes just in case that happens again. But is that a common problem?
What OS and how much memory?
That's
Windows 7?
System.
Yes.
Yeah, I got XP.
Okay.
And I can't tell you, you know, offhand how much memory, but could that be the problem?
It definitely could be. Editing video and audio is a very memory-intensive operation. What we see with a lot of our professional customers, they'll get 8 or 16 gigabytes of RAM. With XP, you're limited to 3.2
right.
with the 32-bit operating system, but a lot of older machines with that came with XP might only have 256 in them, might have 512 in them. I was working on an XP machine this week that only had 256 in it, and his main complaint it was so slow that he bought a new computer.
Yeah.
You might have been able to put more RAM and get a little more life out of it, but it was already 7 years old.
Right.
But
yeah,
it definitely could be RAM.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What if I would it make any difference if I just worked on a movie maker, the movie I'm making, put that on a separate disk?
Well, it doesn't have anything to do with the amount of hard drive space you
Unless your hard drive is already full.
It's the hardware. A hardware issue.
So there's two things. There's the RAM and there's the disk. RAM, you want a minimum of 3 gig.
Uh-huh.
If you don't have that, you're probably underpowered.
Okay.
And that's probably causing the problem. And in disk space, figure out how big your movie is, and you want three times that much free space.
Generally, you like to have about 10% of your hard drive free for scratch space and working files.
One other issue, though, is this onboard video or is it a separate video card?
That could be an issue, too. How much video memory the computer
has. Because if he's got, you know, he's using onboard video, and some of the memory goes to the video.
Right, right, right.
As far as I know, I have onboard video.
Yeah, there you go. There,
is it a Dell?
I'm sorry, what's that?
Is your computer?
It's not a Dell, it's an Asus.
Yeah, but still, no. If you've got, say, 2 gig of that, a proportion of that is being used for graphics memory.
Which then takes away memory for your programs to use.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So it's one of those things that they throw these video editors on these entry-level computers, and they'll work, sort of, but the hardware isn't really up to the task. Unless you get enough free memory, enough free disk space, have enough video memory.
Or get a better program.
Mm-hmm.
Well, or you just really, if you have to beef up your machine. Really, working with video requires way, way more machine than just doing web browsing.
One
and all that
gig video card, go Windows 7, 8 gig of memory, 64-bit processor.
Right.
Okay. Now, I'm if I got a... I don't know what you call it, but if I got a hard drive that I attached to my computer, would that help?
No. Again, the problem is not likely to be the drive space.
It's the hardware.
Okay.
It's the RAM inside the machine, the amount of memory you have, not the amount of hard drive space. Those are two entirely separate things. You do need a lot of hard drive space. Like I said, figure out how big your movie is. You need 3 times that much space in order to work on it. But... More important, and probably what's causing it to freeze, is that you don't have enough RAM.
Okay.
Again, it all boils down to the motherboard, because he's using onboard graphics. So it's like this vicious circle. Mm-hmm. You go ahead and get the hard drive. All you're doing is moving the bottleneck somewhere else, because you're not actually...
Well, I bet he's not actually moving the bottleneck, because I don't think the problem is the hard drive.
Yeah, but you still got to... that space isn't going to gain you anything, because the motherboard, sharing the graphics,
you could add
the memory, OS.
You could add memory, you could add a new video card, you could upgrade your operating system.
You might as well just get a whole new machine.
Yeah.
Truly, at that point.
And when you're looking to buy a machine, you want to tell the salesperson that you're looking to edit video on.
Yeah, that's important.
They'll get you a little higher
machine.
And
then sit down before they give you the price.
Yeah.
Okay, and then what did you say?
Sit down before they give you the price.
Oh, okay.
It shouldn't be too bad. I mean,
Well, compared to the $600 laptop.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
All right, thanks, Jim.
Okay, thanks a lot, guys. Bye now.
Yep, and that's really the problem. These machines will do anything. It's just that they won't often do anything
well.
Well, because they just don't have enough power. You buy that minimum machine. All I'm going to do is surf the web and do email.
Yep.
What are you going to surf on the web? Well, I love to play games at this site, and I love to watch all videos at that site. And by the time you're done, you've tripled the amount of memory you need in the processor.
And you've added a comma to your price.
Yeah, exactly. All right, our next caller is Leah from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Leah. What's your question?
Rush. Okay, well, our computer has a problem with, I don't know if it's called scareware, but this thing popped up called, what is it called? It's called XP Security 2011.
Oh, yeah.
You're infected.
Oh, crap.
Thank you. Very well put.
Very
succinctly.
It pops up and scares you into thinking you're infected, so you click the button, which really does infect you.
It is, pardon my language, one tricky bastard to get rid of.
Yep.
Well, it is very hard.
Welcome to my world.
I can't go on the internet.
Yep.
It stops you from running antivirus and any malware programs.
Yep.
And,
Here's the issue. What normally we have to do, and I deal on this on a daily basis, normally with that one, what we have to do is you bring the machine in, or if you've got the capabilities of pulling that hard drive out, and we put it on a separate machine. We have to isolate it so it doesn't boot. We can then run some utilities that we have to remove that virus, then put it back into the machine to finish the rest of the cleaning.
Is there any way to remove it manually? Because there was a site, was it called Wiki Security or something? And then it said that there was something, I think you had to buy it.
A lot of times there are manual removal methods, but most of these programs will hide themselves in your computer to make them very difficult to find, and they use random file names.
Mm-hmm.
So there might be 1,000 different file names you have to look for to try to remove.
What do I do?
If you have another computer, you can pull the hard drive out of your first computer and then connect it as a slave on the second computer and scan it, or you take it to a shop that can do that for you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we might have to go back to NRICE again.
Yeah.
There you go.
I do have a link I can post that goes through a lot of dangerous editing. You have to go into your registry and pull files out.
We do not recommend
system directory and pull files out.
Mucking about in the registry.
It's very dangerous to try to do a manual removal.
I don't even mention it.
Oh, man. I don't even... I think I may have gotten it. I think I may have gone to this one site just once. And I think there were some hackers that may have been DDoSing it.
Mm-hmm. Could be. Well, and sometimes it's a misspelling. I got to clear my cache. I misspelled Google once.
Oh.
G-O-G-G-L-E.
Oh, that's not a good site.
And right. And it's in my cache. So now as soon as I start typing G-O, oh, there it is. I hit return. Oh, crap. That was the wrong one again.
Yeah. And all of those of you out there going there hoping to find dirty stuff, no, it's just that it's a virus site. Don't go there.
Yeah.
A lot of the bad guys will register names of sites that are very close in spelling to real popular sites so that you accidentally go there and get infected.
The problem with that is it's extremely deceptive. Yep. And so now I'm afraid that any antivirus thing is in itself a virus.
Could be.
Well, that's why you want to stick with the ones we always talk about on the Security Tango.
Well, they make them look so official in some of these other bank sites and everything
else. But if you go to securitytango.com, and make sure you spell that right, you'll find links to a lot of the free antivirus programs, which also have pay sides to them. You can pay, and that's always a good thing to do. But the reality is that you really have to have at least one site that you trust that links to the other sites before you go out there and start playing around.
Okay, but we ran ran two antivirus programs and it didn't pick all of
right.
the stuff.
Right. Because well, it's not always on this
one. Antivirus detection.
There is no single program that can find everything.
But they're not always viruses. They're
Trojans. Most of these malicious programs hide themselves to get away from being detected. So you need an antivirus program. You need an anti-malware program. You need an anti-pop-up program. You need an anti-spam program. And all of these things need to keep running. And you probably still will get infected.
The bottom line is you really need to take it to Dave and have him pull the drive and clean it. That is the only safe way to know it's been done.
Oh, I was hoping it wouldn't have to come to that. Great.
No, I understand that.
Why?
Sorry, Leah.
Wait, why? We miss you.
Yep.
Aw. Well,
she's got to drive in from Rush, that's why.
Yep.
So I drive down that way all the time.
Stop at her house, grab the hard drive.
And then you could do what a lot of...
Yeah, grab the whole computer.
Yeah, you could do what a lot of people have done is stop using Windows. Well, the first thing is stop using Internet Explorer, and then the second thing is stop using Windows.
I didn't use IE, it was on Firefox.
On Firefox, but these pop-up messages still look real enough that they catch enough people to make it worthwhile.
One of the things that I always tell people to do is change the color of your scheme in Windows. Because when they pop something up, they often pop it up in the standard Windows blue. So if you change to the silver theme or one of the others, then when it pops up, it'll stand out more, and you'll say, wait a minute, this is still in that old blue. It's clearly fake. Listen, we got to go, Leah. Good luck.
Thanks for
calling. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 39 minutes after the hour. We are the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Thank you so much for being members of the Soundbites family and of Jazz 90.1.
Jan Niffler. Join me weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
Don't get me started.
33 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbite. She's got best voice for radio. She really does.
Oh, I know. She'd melt the phone lines.
Yeah.
But no, you get me going on that, and then all of a sudden I go right to the solar panel.
I know. See that? It's the solar panel. Dave's gone now. We'll just talk around Dave for a while. Let me read another news
Thank
item
you.
While Dave gets back to the real world. Sony warned its 77 million PlayStation Network and Curiosity Online service customers that their credit card data, billing addresses, and other personal information may have been stolen by a hacker. While there's no evidence at this time that credit card data were taken, we cannot rule out the possibility, said Patrick Sabold, a Sony spokes individual, said that on the company blog page. The hackers obtained user-provided names, email addresses, birth dates, login information, and purchase history. Sony intrusions follows a March 30th breach at Alliance Data Corporation's Epsilon Data Management LLC, which resulted in the theft of customer data at banks including Citicorp and JP Morgan Chase, as well as retailers Best Buy and Walgreens. The company reported the intrusion to the better. Oh man, I have
new mouth.
Lost it. I brushed my teeth. Can't do a thing with them. The company reported the intrusion to the Federal Bureau of Investigation office in San Diego that specializes in cybercrime. Daryl Foxworth, an FBI special agent at San Diego, said he can neither confirm nor deny whether there was an investigation. If you're going to be an FBI special agent, your name should be Daryl Foxworth. Daryl Foxworth, special agent.
Yeah,
Daryl Foxworth, FBI. The PlayStation Network, which provided access to online games, movies, and TV shows, was attacked from April 17th to April 19th. Sony has combined PlayStation Network customer data with Curiosity, which offers movies and music in 11 nations on web-connected Bravia TVs and Blu-ray players. That service also was compromised, Sony said. Sony shut down both services April 20th. Some features were expected to be restored within a week, Siebold said. The company recommended that people change their passwords and user IDs when the service is restored, and to do the same elsewhere if they reuse the same login data with other businesses. And how many times have we said never use the same username and password twice? The PSN service troubles have certainly come at an opportune moment in light of the firm's announcement on April 26th of a move into tablets as part of efforts to beef up network services. The six-day delay in notifying customers of the intrusion is troubling. U.S. Senator Richard Blumenthal, a Democrat from Connecticut, told Sony Computer Entertainment President Jack Trenton in a letter dated April 26. So our question to you, are you on Sony's PlayStation Network or Curiosity? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll free at 1-800-790-0415. And it's never too late to pledge securely online at jazz901.org.
Talking about passwords?
Yeah.
Uncle Dave's got a good one.
Oh, we'll talk to Uncle Dave in the next hour.
Yeah. You are not going to believe this story.
Now, see, you underestimate my ability to believe almost anything of our users.
Oh, this one, Nick, in all the years that I've been doing this.
Oh, we can't wait.
Oh,
all right.
It's, you'll sit there and go, no. So, yes, definitely. We'll do it in the next hour, but you definitely got to be around to hear this one because it was hysterical. I almost got laughing as hard thinking about it as when you sit there and say your solar panel.
Yeah, see?
Oh, yeah. That was that close.
Yes, I want to apologize to Drach, who's on our IRC chat. He prefers the term cracker to hacker. I understand.
Criminal
that.
Hackers, yeah.
Right.
Because a lot of us were hackers. You sit at the terminal and hack out your code.
I still am a hacker.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Ashcan, thank you, has ordered me a new tongue from Amazon. Absolutely need that. Ashcan also.
Federal Express is a little behind in delivery notes, so forget it.
Yeah. DSL Reports was hacked too. He had to change his accounts.
My granddaughter's PlayStation. She still couldn't get into, you know, like we're trying to do the Netflix on that. And the internet for through the PlayStation 3 is still down.
Yeah, when they discovered this issue, Sony discovered the issue on April 19th, and they shut the service down.
On April 20th, they waited a day.
Yeah, they're bringing in forensic experts, and they're trying to figure out exactly what happened.
Yeah, good luck. If it's most likely, it's somebody over in a third world country, and trying to find them and prosecute them. That's about as effective as the government trying to run the internet.
They're more and more organized, and they're more and more insidious.
Back in the day, hackers were kids who should really be outside dating, just essentially counting coups, right? But particularly with the fall of the Soviet Union, there were all the various stans, you know, the nations that all end in stan, that have no natural resources and have no organization. But they have a lot of really, really, really good programmers.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially the Russian mafia, or whatever you want to call it, steps in and says to all these guys, look, we will use your talents to make money. And they pay them comparatively good money for them.
Oh, yeah, over there.
And now instead of being malicious in the sense of we just want to, you know, it's like tagging somebody's house, right? Instead of just painting graffiti on your computer, now they're looking to steal stuff. Now they're looking to get passwords and credit card numbers and all that stuff. And because they're all real professional high-end programmers, the attacks are getting more and more insidious. And so one of the ways you protect yourself is never use the same password on two systems. That way, if one gets compromised, another one won't. If you use the same password everywhere, then you deserve what happens to you. I don't know how to put that any plainer.
And don't think you're too dumb to remember more than one password.
That's exactly right. I'm old, and I remember 50 different passwords every single day. And the way you do it, and I've said this 100 times, pick a phrase from a movie, a play, a song lyric, anything you want that this thing reminds you of. So, and it's because I don't use this one that I can use it. So, for example, if you use the phrase, I think that I shall never see a poem lovely as a tree. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14 letters. So, assuming I counted that right. Now you've got a 14-letter password because you take the first letter of each word. Then maybe you replace the I's with ones. Capitalize all the T's. Replace the A's with four. What you end up with is something that looks completely random, but in fact makes sense to you. And you, all you have to now remember is that, well, my AOL password is Joyce Kilmer poem.
Yep.
Right? So when you do things like that, you create passwords that are very easy for you to remember and very difficult to crack because they all look so random. And it's not difficult to do. It's not difficult to remember. And in particular, if you pick things that are fairly obscure, like not a Joyce Kilmer poem, because that's the only one everybody knows, even if you wrote down, you know, Hotmail, Beatles, would that, you know, that's, mm-hmm. that's a bit of a clue, but not much. And then yep. you just have to remember it's the first two lines of Judy in the Sky with Diamonds.
Every time some website gets hacked and the list of passwords comes out,
yeah,
you know, the passwords are ridiculous. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Password. I love you. Now, people pick very
amazing. That's the same password I have on my luggage.
Yeah. Why didn't you tell me my butt was so fat?
Yeah.
It's perfectly safe. Snotty beamed to me twice yesterday.
Yeah. Does this make me look fat?
There's a website called whatsmypass.com. And it will tell you how bad your password is.
You're right. It's Lucy in the Sky. Oh, my God, Chris. You're absolutely right. Yep. I apologize. Did I say Judy in the Sky with Diamonds? Man, oh, man. I remember the song,
that was the first draft.
But I'm too old to remember what I remember.
Golden Throats. William Shatner singing Lucy in air
Judy
quotes.
Judy in the Sky. Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds.
Oh. Yeah. Pitcher. That had to be
yeah, I know.
Painful.
It really, if you ever get the opportunity to catch there's I think there were at least four of them.
Yep.
Because I had number four. Golden Throats, it was called. And it was people who can't sing singing popular songs.
The subtitle was Celebrities Slaughter the Beatles.
Yeah. And there are several of those albums out, and they're hysterical.
From Rhino Records. Yeah, Golden Throats 4 was the Beatles. 3 was Rodeo Drive. 2 was Rock Oddities. Leonard Nimoy singing Proud Mary.
Oh, I've heard that one too.
Yep. Jim Nabors, You Are the Sunshine of My Life.
Jim Nabors, though, had a real voice.
Yeah, real good singer.
I mean, you know, he talked like this, and then he sang like this. It was really quite amazing. All right.
Phyllis Diller doing I Can't Get No Satisfaction.
Well, there's that. All right, on to our next caller. We have Sal from Fairport, New York. Welcome, Sal. What's your question?
Hey, guys. Hey, I just wanted to find out if you had seen the article on using 3 random American words and being just as effective a password as a very highly randomized, multi-lettered, 8 to 12 letters long password.
Well, that's an interesting point. And let's say, for example, I used to tell people to use Happy Monkey, Happy 34 Monkey.
Right.
We all remember that one. The problem is that a lot of brute force attacks these days are dictionary attacks. So they will eventually guess those because they're real words.
But not in that particular order. That'll
take a long time.
You're right. That would take a long time as well. That might work as well.
Take decades or hundreds of years.
Or it guesses right the first time.
or the first time, exactly. But,
yeah.
You know, like flip-flop-dop to put that together.
Right. No, that makes sense. I would not use flip and flop next to each other. But,
well, no, okay.
Right. But I get what you're saying. I do. Mm-hmm. I get exactly what you're saying. So if I were to, instead of happy 34 monkey, happy monkey puppy.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But something that you can remember.
There's a random word generator. Masking tape, bacteria, sofa.
Okay.
There you go.
I don't want to live in that house.
Yeah, it was an article that came out during the week, I think, last week. Sometime.
Well, Steve will post the random word generator for you. That's a great tip, Sal. Thank you.
The thing of it is, though, is when you use those, write them down, because you know what? When it comes to all of a sudden, if you got to get into that system and you forgot the password because it's doing all these different passwords on you, and they say, well, can you get this out? No.
Well, a lot of times you can use a password manager like LastPass or 1Pass, or the Mac has one built in called Keychain.
Right.
And it remembers all your passwords for you for all these different websites, and you just have to remember your one master password. So make that a good one as well. And then if you ever forget a password for your email, then you can go in and look up what it is.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I use one called KeePass, KeePass, Keep Password, with 1P. Those are all free, and KeePass has a terrific 256 bit algorithm. It's AES certified and yada yada yada. So
FIPS 181 compliant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
sorry. Go ahead.
Sorry. No, I was gonna say, as I sit there and do it on a spreadsheet that I keep on a thumb drive, and I also print it off, and that's in a folder, just in case. You know, I mean, the hard drive. You know.
No, I get that. Well, what's nice is KeePass runs on everything, including Android.
Ooh.
So every time I add or change a password, I update the one on my phone as well. I just pull the whole file over because it's the same file for every version.
Oh, cool.
So I just have to sync the file to my phone, and I've got it there. I've got it, and I can put it on the web anywhere I want. It's 256-bit encryption.
Mm-hmm.
So I can, if I wanted to put it in Dropbox or whatever, I don't. But if I wanted to, I certainly could. I do have it on one of my many servers out on the internet. And I know which one and where. So that I use the same file at work, the same file at home, the same file on my desktop, on my laptop, on my machine at home.
And a lot of these password manager programs, and even most websites now, when you go to create a password, they'll tell you how strong that password is as you're typing it in. So, you know, I'm in my keychain now. If I type in happy, you know, even spelling it wrong, that's a very poor password. Happy 34. Yeah, okay. It's, you know, I type in M. Now it's getting a little better, and you know, as long as they get all the way to monkey, and now it's reasonably good.
It's funny, when I use a foreign word, it goes up to strong real quickly, and then you throw a number in there, and it's very strong.
Yeah. I used to have a friend who was an archaeologist, and his passwords were all the names of the Aztec deities.
Yeah.
So Quetzalcoatl and things like that. It was
your first problem is figuring out how to spell it.
Well, that's not for him. He knew how to do that. That's what he did all day long. So he was a little bit ahead of that game, I guess. And actually, that had been his minor in college. So if you didn't know that about him, you know, you might go with his major, which had nothing to do with that. So yeah. All right. Thanks, Sal.
Oh, sure. Thanks.
Try typing in. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times in your.
Yeah, see what it comes up.
Oh, I think. Oh no, I think that I shall never see a poem lovely as a tree. Just the first letters. I suspect that's going to be pretty strong, pretty fast. Yeah, it takes a minute to. I think that I shall. Yeah, but those are the kind of things that you do, and particularly, like I said, if you replace the I's with ones, the A's with fours.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's weak as just numbers.
Right. As letters, you mean?
Yeah. So yeah, I put one number in, and I got good.
Yeah. So
let's see, put an at symbol in instead of the A. Now I got excellent.
Yep. See, and it's just a matter of doing that. Maybe capitalize the T's on top of it. And by mixing those numbers and letters, capitals and lower cases in what seems to be a random order but makes sense to you, you end up with a much, much better password. I wish we could show you this. It went from being weak with just the first letter to very strong the minute he put in a number or two. And that's all it takes to change it from easily broken to, oh, hell no, to go back to what we were talking about earlier. We're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour. You're listening to Soundbites, and we want to thank you for being members of the Soundbites family and member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Let me start out this hour by again thanking each and every one of you who has been so generous over the past few weeks in helping us to reach our goal of $50,000. It's the only money we get to keep this station alive. We don't get money from the government of any sort, federal, state, local, name it. We don't get any money from districts or counties or anything.
None of that.
It all comes from you. There's only eight of these types of stations left in the world, jazz stations like this. And it's the generosity of you, our members, who make this station possible. And we want to thank you, particularly since in the last 2 weeks, we just simply whopped the living butts of the polka dots and brought in some decent money. And that's all down to you. We didn't do it. As in the three of us, we did it as in all of us, you, the members of the Soundbites family. And I just want to once again convey our gratitude to you for stepping up to the plate the way you have. We're so very grateful. Thank you again.
Well, I'm hoping that somebody out there, you've got from now until fall, start saving up your pennies.
It was a great idea.
And, you know, this way, when it comes time,
put away a buck a week.
Yeah. And you start putting it away. And then come time when we tell you, you know, for $750, you could be sitting right here with us doing our two-hour show.
$2 a day. Right.
And be part of Soundbites. We'll have you right.
Put away whatever you can afford. But yeah. The reality is that if you just put a little bit away every week and you're looking for Soundbites, come time for our fall campaign, you'll have a decent amount of money that
especially when you sit there and
become a member and keep us going.
And especially when we turn around and recommend something, you try it out and it's like, oh, that worked. How much did we just save you?
Right. Throw a couple bucks in the
pot. Throw it in a jar. Set it aside. You know, and then when we come, you can call in and say, hey, tell you what, you guys saved me so much and I've been setting it aside. Here you go.
Yeah, like, we would love to see that.
We'll keep it going. Yeah. But again, thank you for all the great support that the folks did do even yesterday when we were here winding things up. You know, the folks stepped right up to the plate, called in, got us right to this $50,000 goal. It's amazing.
Well, depressed as I was the first few weeks, the second and third week when people weren't calling in, the last 2 weeks people stepped up to the plate, and I am so grateful. Thank you again.
Yep.
Hey, I got this. I never, ever wanted to mention this particular news item. The federal and state budget squeezes affecting life here on Earth and beyond. Astronomers at the SETI Institute in Northern California announced that it has been forced to stop operations at the Allen Telescope Array, a field of more than 40 radio dishes that scan the skies for communications from aliens. The array began scanning for signals from extraterrestrial life in October of 2007, and SETI planned to eventually expand the project to 350 dishes covering 90 square miles, but financial constraints are forcing the Institute's astronomers to put the array into hibernation. Effective this week, the Allen Telescope Array has been placed into hibernation due to funding shortfalls for operations of the Hat Creek Radio Observatory, where the array is located, wrote SETI Institute CEO Tom Pearson in an open letter sent late last week to project donors. Unfortunately, today's government budgetary environment is very difficult and new solutions must be found. I don't believe those new solutions are going to lean heavily on the few bucks that I sent them. Pearson did note in the letter that the Institute is negotiating a potential partnership with the U.S. Air Force to use the dish array to help track space debris, which might give the project the funding it needs to someday resume the search for alien life. This effort is ongoing and shows much promise, but near-term funding has been delayed due to the same highly publicized large-scale federal budget problems we all read about in the news, wrote Pearson. Located in Hat Creek, California, about 300 miles northwest of San Francisco, the dish array is operated by the SETI Institute, which is a group focused on finding extraterrestrial life, and the University of California at Berkeley. SETI, of course, stands for the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. The SETI Institute raised the funds needed to construct the array, while funding the observatory's operations has been the responsibility of the state university. The construction of the array was largely funded by the Paul G. Allen Family Foundation. Allen is a co-founder of Microsoft. So our question to you, are you a SETI fan? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
And it's especially sad now that the Kepler telescope has found, 1,500 extrasolar planets, and more than 50 of them are Earth-sized and in the Earth habitable zone and could support life.
And so all we would need to do is to be able to focus those arrays in that in those various directions and listen.
Yep.
I was actually the SETI user of the day once. I was very shocked.
Yep.
A friend of mine pointed it out to me. Was it you?
I think so, yeah.
It was you. Pointed it out to me before I had seen it, so I was very pleased, and I went and took a picture. I've got it somewhere.
Yeah.
It was really kind of nice.
I got a congratulatory letter from Carl Sagan when I reached 500 work units or whatever it was.
Very nice.
Especially considering he'd been dead for years.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, he's Carl Sagan. What do you? Yeah. what's left to say about that?
Yeah.
So yeah, it is very sad that that we're not doing that anymore. We don't go to the moon anymore. We're never going to go to space again now.
There's actually in the new budget, there's a few $100 million to work on a new ship designed to return us to the moon in the next 20 years.
Happen. It's you know it's not going
to
happen.
It's a tiny amount of money, but it's back there.
All right, our next caller is Aaron. Where are you calling from, Aaron?
Oh, I'm in New York.
Where?
Livonia.
Livonia.
Up by Geneseo.
He was echoing.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice place. You know, beautiful day today.
Yep. What can we do for you?
Oh, I just heard you guys talking about the SETI.
Yep.
Yeah, extraterrestrial life. What do you guys think about that?
What do we think about it? I'm a member of SETI, and
are you a firm believer in extraterrestrial life?
Yeah. I'm a member of SETI, and I'm donating computer time to decrypt some of the signals that they found, so I can't not believe in it, I think.
What did Sagan say? There's so much space out there that if there isn't extraterrestrial life, it's such a waste of space.
Yeah, I know. Well, the reality is this. Look, I believe in math, and math tells me that out there somewhere, whether it's life as we know it or you know, you can argue whether it's going to have a soul or whatever. The reality is there's got to be something else out there. I don't know that God would waste all that space.
I believe there's been extraterrestrial life on Mars since before we know it. You know?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it should be. So, of course,
and eventually, eventually we're going to have to leave this planet anyway. Our you know, we've only got 5 billion years left before our sun blows up.
That's right.
No, it's not going to explode. It's just going to blow up and bigger and bigger and bigger and melt
us. Blow up like a balloon as opposed to blow up like an atom bomb.
We're so insignificant. Our sun isn't even big enough to make a nova.
You're right.
You're right. That's wild.
Yeah, but we'll see. I would love, I think, to discover we're not alone out there, and it would be interesting. But it's being shut down, or if it's done being shut down,
it's only a matter of time, you know. Yeah.
And the Allen array was made famous by the Jodie Foster movie Contact,
right?
Of the Carl Sagan book,
right?
That's where she was working when they discovered the signal.
All right. Yep. All right, Aaron. Thank you so much.
All right. Cool. Thanks.
It is an interesting phenomenon, and. I wish we could continue to fund it, maybe at some future time.
One other thing I want to point out, you know, Harry pointed out, and we've been telling the different phone numbers that you can call, you know, get a hold of us. But there is a new way now if you want to text us. If you dial 585-209-9010, you know, you're in your car and don't want to, you know, go on the air. Some folks just like to ask a question. You know, Texas.
Yeah, get it to 9010, 90.1 FM. Get it. And what's the exchange?
585-209-9010. Yep.
Easy enough to remember.
Yep.
And you can text us something if you want to do that.
Yep.
We, of course, also, Soundbites has their own number you can text.
And that be?
That number is 585-348-8255 or FIT. talk.
Ooh.
And if you text that number with the word stock and a stock symbol, you'll get the latest trade price. If you text it with the word weather, you get the weather for Rochester, New York. If you text it with the word define and an acronym, it will bring back that tech acronym. And if you text it with the word help, it tells you what you can text it with.
Cool.
And we've had people using it. It hasn't gotten incredibly popular yet, but people have been using it. Mm-hmm. I actually use it to look up acronyms. I've got to load it up with some finance acronyms now, because I'm going to meetings with my finance faculty and they're using terms left and right that I don't know.
Talk about acronyms. You know, my dad's still in the hospital. I was up there. You know, I've always seen, and I know it just because I know it, NPO.
It means can't have any
nothing
food
by mouth. But it means nil per os.
Right.
I looked it up, and it's like, and I was telling a couple nurses.
And if you know Latin, that makes sense to you.
But, you know, I was asking the nurse, what does NPO, you know, does it equate to nothing by mouth? They're all going, I don't know. So, of course, I had to go home, come back the next day to see my dad, and I go, and this one nurse is still on, and I go, I found out. She goes, what? Nil per os. She goes,
nothing in the mouth.
Never heard of that
before.
Last
time I was in the hospital, the doctor had lifted my NPO, but they forgot to take the sign off the wall behind me.
Would you please check with him again at that? Because I'm thirsty. I want something to drink. And, you know, you can't even have a glass of water.
Right. It's nil means nil, buddy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, my dad had that at one point in the hospital. And I said, nurse, what's NPO? And she said, nothing by mouth. And I went, Latin. Yeah. She said, what? I said, probably means nil per. I said, osso.
Nothing in your orifice.
Not us means nothing. Us, never mind. And she said, you speak Latin? And I said, don't you? You're a nurse.
Yeah.
For me, it's an oddity. For you, I would think it would be a job requirement.
Yep.
I was thrilled when my daughter in one of the Rochester City School District high schools took Latin for 3 years. We could finally talk to each other.
They still teach Latin?
Yeah, well, who knows what's going to happen now. Don't get me started. Our next caller is Victor from his car. Welcome, Victor. What can we do for you?
Hi, guys. I've been using the Sea Cleaner and the Malwarebytes and Super Nice Spyware religiously. And there's another program I've been also using for quite a while. It's called Glary Utilities, Glary. I kind of like it. It's a cleanup tool. What do you guys think?
Glary Utilities?
Yeah, Glary.
I have not used it, but I will look it up.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
There's a bunch of new ones a bunch of ones that I have not used in the past, not because they're bad or you know, something wrong with them, just that there are so many good ones out there that I haven't used them all.
How did he spell that? G-L-A-R-Y?
G-L-A-R-Y.
Yep. GlaryUtilities.com.
So, we will definitely look into that, Victor. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. I did write Victor Carr. I wonder what the map will make of that.
He's from originally Irondequoit.
Well, it's too late now. I've already closed it up.
Okay.
You know, of course, folks, that we have our own caller map at soundbites.org/map. And you will see a list of all the people who have called into our show over the years. You can zoom in. It's a Google map, so you can zoom in. You can look at the individual places. We're obviously deeply into the northeast of the United States, but we've had calls from Beijing, China, and a couple from Australia and Hawaii and Canada and all kinds of places. So get yourself on the map. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Now, is it odd that I'm using a satellite to view a picture of a telescope? That's the Allen array.
And it's staring back at you. What's happening?
Yeah.
So yeah, I am Google Maps looking at a picture
Nishi
of the Allen
was
array.
Right, but it wasn't an abyss. It was an array.
Yeah.
Oops.
Okay, that went over. Head. All right. But yeah, so join us on the line and get yourself into the map itself. I was amazed at how easy it was. Google is making everything easy.
Well, yeah, they're trying to do it all.
The
cloud computing, the whole nine yards.
Yep, we were talking about that at the beginning when we were talking about LibreOffice and some of the folks in the IRC chat at Octothorpe Soundbites. We're saying, you know, you can do it all with Google Docs now. And in fact, we're doing that. I'm on a committee, speaking of cloud computing, I'm on a committee at work to look into doing cloud computing, and we're going to use Google Docs to do that.
Cool.
That way we can write the proposal,
mm-hmm.
and all of us can work on it. In fact, we can work on it simultaneously if we want to, and add all the pieces and parts we want to add and see each other making changes and everything else. We don't have to meet nearly as often because we can work online and simultaneously. It's an amazing feat.
Especially with the price of gas.
Well, exactly. And we're using Google Docs. There are others that do it. We just happen to be using Google Docs.
What about the big Amazon S3 outage?
Oh, the Amazon S3 outage. The Amazon, of course, has their S3 set up with EC2 and all the other stuff that they do, and they were just out. Apparently what they said was, whether this is in fact what happened, but what they said was that they were testing some backup procedures, and what happened was they screwed something up, and instead of cutting over to their one of their extra high-capacity lines, they cut over to their low capacity line, which got overwhelmed and started shutting stuff down.
Yep, shut down some huge sites.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, people were, what's the word I'm looking for? Angry.
The cloud
failed.
That's
not the word I was looking for, but yes.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the problem with the cloud. One of the things that we're talking about is virtualizing everybody's server. And if we do that, what are the risks? Well, one of the risks is you find yourself in a place with no internet access. And now you can't get at your stuff. So how do we mitigate that risk? Well, you buy a few hotspots, and if you're going to be going somewhere where you think there's no internet, you bring a hotspot with you, right? So, all right, we're going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites, and you are a member of the Soundbites family on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Thanks again. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And at 23 minutes after the hour, it's that time once again, kiddies. That's right. Get your footy jammies on. Grab a mug of hot cocoa, sit Indian style in a semicircle around the rocking chair. Because if we can slap him awake, it's time for story hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
Yeah. Yep. All right. Now, as that one young lady called in, I forget her name in that, but who's ever calling, you got to hold on because I can't get to the phone right now.
Right.
Anyways, you know, viruses are going wild right now, and we keep telling them, you know, you got to protect your passwords and everything.
It was Leah who called in.
Yeah. You know, and you got to watch where you go and all that good stuff. Well, I had a client bring a computer in, and they said, oh, you know, it's all infected again. Yeah, and I had to pull the hard drive out and all that. And they said, and I've been hacked. Okay. Well, go ahead. You know, we'll get it cleaned up. No problem. They said, well, can you come back and, you know, get it all set up for us and that, you know, and make sure, double check everything at the house? Sure. All right. It was maybe 3-4 days later. I would go back, get the machine there, and we're going in. And, I mean, the house is just crawling with people. They're literally living in one part of their house. I go to set up the computer. No wonder they were hacked. Their mental midget kid decided he couldn't remember passwords. Right along the screen is all the passwords.
Nice.
With the different accounts.
Nice.
They're wondering why they're getting hacked. I mean, hello, they've got delivery people, everybody else going in and out of there, delivering stuff. I saw people dropping stuff off and everything else, going through this house and going right by where the computer is.
Nice.
Gee, you think maybe it was hacked? Because they saw all the passwords there?
That's not a hack.
That's like saying, literally opening the doors, you know, inviting them in and saying, here you go!
Yeah, if I were a cracker, I wouldn't even bother with them because there's no challenge.
The front door key is up to the mat.
Yeah.
Just put the sign on the door.
But don't worry about it because the door's open anyway.
Yeah. I turned to her, I says, what the hell is this?
That's very funny.
She goes, I mean, I have never seen him a complete, I mean, I have gone to computers, you know, flipped up the keyboard.
At least put him in a notebook. give him a little
No,
challenge.
This one fits right between a 23-inch, you know, attached to a 23-inch screen.
Nice. I think the biggest security threat in America is the Post-it note, personally.
But there it was, you know, all clear, the what website to go to, the username and the password.
Nice.
And, you know, they're wondering, why is that? I says, you know, no wonder you're getting problems and your account has been hacked. There's why. Well, he has the trouble remembering them. Well, so put it in a folder and put it in a drawer. Well, yeah, that is a little inconvenient. You know, I wanted to, you know, put up one of those red bullseyes on the wall and say, bang head here, because that's about what you need.
Yep.
Yep, that's funny.
Oh, the other one.
Keyboard dents in your forehead from, oh.
Yeah, absolutely. That's just funny. That's just very funny. We see it all the time. I said once a long time ago, I worked in a place that I won't mention, and they wanted me to go around. My first day there, they wanted me to go around and update everybody's McAfee, but I didn't have any passwords. And out of the 75 desktops I had to go to, 73 of them I had no challenge with, none at all. They either had it under the keyboard or posted right on the monitor. One guy thought it was very cleverly hidden. It was tape. It was a Post-it note on the side of the drawer.
Yep.
You pull open the bottom drawer and it's on the side. But it was on the side right up against your leg. So, you know, you wouldn't normally see it looking in. Yeah, that was real secure. And so, really, there were only two that I couldn't get.
There was another one, excuse me, a website that I went to. I refused to sign up for it because it limited me to a password of 6 to 11 characters. Granted, yes, I could get creative new, but I don't like a site that sits there and puts a limit on it. Hello, that's a field that you should be able to open up to 24 characters at least.
There are still legacy systems out in the world being used every day, and particularly in banks and places like that, which is why they get broken to all the time, that have a maximum of 6 characters for the password.
I remember, I think it was...
maximum.
No.
One of the very large banks, I remember reading a report about, you could have any length password you wanted, but only the first 6 characters were recognized.
Well, it used to be...
And it never told you that.
Yes, and it used to be that Windows.
Yeah.
Only the first 8 characters of your password were encrypted.
Yep. Well, and the
rest of it would be open. So if your password was "I love chocolate cake," you got most of chocolate cake, and you could figure out, well, it's this many letters. It's probably "I love."
Yep. And in the early versions of Windows, you just hit escape anyway, and
right.
It takes you to the desktop.
Right. My favorite was Bob, Microsoft Bob.
Yep. Oh, yes.
Which was Melinda Gates's child. And if you typed your password 3 times in a row, times in a row, it would pop up a window saying, "I see you've forgotten your password. Shall I tell you what it was?" Why, thank you. That's very nice of you.
Yep.
But those were different days. We shouldn't forget that those were different days. Those were days when there wasn't, nobody really thought about security on a computer because you didn't need it.
Yeah, the whole point of a computer was sitting around sharing code with each other.
That's exactly right, whether that code wanted to be shared or not, whether the company that designed that code wanted to share it or not. That's a whole other story. We're going to take a quick break back and...
No, wrong music.
I thought I heard music.
That's the Uncle Dave end music.
Oh, there we go. All right, kiddies, you're probably just sitting there in your footy jammies trying to figure out what the heck to do with this empty coffee mug. All right, that's it. Get rid of that empty coffee mug and put it in the sink. Get out of your footy jammies. We'll put Uncle Dave back on the shelf for another week. You got to turn that music up at least enough to be heard by these old ears. That's the other part there. I thought that was a little quick for a break, but there was music. Bob barely could hear it.
And Bob had such a friendly icon.
Bob, Microsoft Bob had a very friendly icon.
And he had glasses, so he was smart. He was
essentially Bill Gates with no hair and jaundice. But other than that, it was okay. We're happy to help you remember to have a better password. But in the meantime, we're going to go back to the phones. We're going to talk to Joe in Henrietta, New York. Welcome, Joe. What's your question?
Oh, what's up, guys? Is this on the air right now?
What? I did not hear that.
Am I on the air right now?
You're actually right on the air, Joe.
Are you engineering listening right now?
You're on the air.
Awesome. I love this show.
Thanks. Thanks so much, Joe. I appreciate that.
Hey, you know, I really love 91.1. You know, it's just, it's got the best music all the time. Real music on the radio. It lives. You know, I love it. Thanks.
Thank you very much. We appreciate that you love this station. Thanks for calling. Another unsolicited testimonial, ladies and gentlemen, for the joy of 90.1 FM, one of the very few jazz stations left in the world. And we want to thank you again, all those of you who have become members of the Soundbites family and members of the Jazz 90.1 family. We did reach our goal this fund drive, and it's solely due to you people that we get nothing else. And so we want to thank you all, and we hope that many of you, like Joe from Henrietta, love this station and love the music and love the additional shows like ours that this station puts on the air. Our next caller is Fritz from probably Canandaigua.
You guessed right, Nick. You're right on the ball.
Thank you. What can we do for you, Fritz?
In response to that caller that called in about the three-word random password, Steve Gibson kind of shot that down. He didn't think too much of that. That article came out about 3 or 4 weeks ago, I think, when you about the time you were out sick. And then on Security Now, Steve gave the explanation why that really wasn't earth-shaking, you know. And
was it because of the brute force dictionary attack?
Something like that.
Yeah, and that's the thing I would have against it. You know, you got to have, although using the numbers in place of letters is also becoming more commonly part of the attack. But if you use just the first letter of things, it's not a word, and so the brute force attacks won't pick it up.
Yeah, well, everything this fellow was suggesting was just alpha, nothing numeric, or no uppercase, lowercase. It was all, you know.
Yeah, right.
That was Security Now. I have a password story for you.
Yeah. Sure. That's Security Now episode 297, for those of you that are interested. I haven't gotten to that one yet in my list. I'm like a month behind because my commute is so short.
Yeah, right. What's your password story?
It's not quite politically correct because it's a dumb blonde story.
Oh, no, but I think we better not go for it.
They asked her a password, and she said it was Sneezy Dopey Doc Grumpy Huey Louie Dewey Albany. And they said, how did you come up with that? She said I had to have 6 characters and a capital.
Good one! Well done.
Well, I'm ahead.
And there are a lot of dumb blonde men, so that makes sense to me. Yeah. All right. Thanks a lot, Fritz.
Okay.
That's a good one.
We look forward to your letters and emails. That was Fritz from Canandaigua, not any of us.
I was actually watching Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader last night, and this dumb blonde was on it, and she was the first person to ever get all the way through, answered all the questions without using a cheat. And of course, Foxworthy tries to build the tension. You know, one of the questions was, what's the name of a state capital that has the state name in it? And he said her answer was Oklahoma City. And so Jeff goes, well, have you ever heard of New York City? And she goes, well, yeah, but that's not the capital.
Right.
What was interesting is that three of the kids answered California towns because it's filmed in California. So the West Coast people don't know about the East Coast. And the East Coast people don't know about the West Coast.
One of the
questions was what was the first suspension bridge to use steel cables? Yeah, we, of course, on this coast, know it's the Brooklyn Bridge.
Right.
But all the kids on the show answered Golden Gate Bridge.
Right.
We had a question, text message, that somebody wanted to know, what OS does NASA use? And they go, sure as hell can't be Windows.
It could be. But that's a very good question. I have not...
Linux.
Let me put this as politely as possible. I've not been involved with NASA in many, many years. But back in the day, I know that the systems with which I was familiar used proprietary versions of Forth, which is not only a programming language, but also its own operating system. I'm sure that they use a multitude of different systems on a multitude of different projects. So,
and in the regular office computers where they got to type letters on, they're probably using different operating systems than what they use in the back to program the space shuttle.
I doubt that they're homogenous in any way.
Yeah.
But that's an excellent question to know because we know from Independence Day that aliens use Macs.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that there are viruses for Macs, clearly.
Yeah, he wrote one. And negotiating
about
with
about 8 seconds.
Negotiating with foreign host takes a whole new meaning.
Yeah, right. All right, our next caller is Marcia from Greece, New York. Welcome, Marcia. What's your question?
Hi there. I have two, actually. I have a Lenovo laptop, Y510, which I absolutely love. But what I don't love is what I've been using for my internet connection is an AT&T communication manager plug-in connect.
Uh-huh.
And I admit, I guess this is one of the first generation ones, but I am not happy with it at all. It keeps dropping out. It just doesn't work well for me.
Right. You're on the cell network? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Do you have any suggestions for plug-in Wi-Fis or plug-in connects that work better?
Yes.
Most people don't use the plug-in connectors anymore. They'll use a Wi-Fi connector.
Okay.
The Verizon MiFi, I think AT&T also sells similar ones too, because they can be used on a multitude of devices. If you use a USB connector, it can only be used on that one computer.
Mm-hmm.
With a Wi-Fi hotspot, you can use it on your phone, on your tablet, on your computers, and multiple devices can use it.
And it's a device that's maybe somewhat bigger than a deck of cards.
Oh, so I could use it on my Nook as well.
Exactly. Right. Yep. What you do is you set it up, and hopefully you'll put a password on it. Hopefully you'll put a password on it, Marcia.
Yeah.
And
characters in a...
right?
At a capital.
Exactly.
Oh,
now we're talking. We know more about Marcia than we need to know now. And that just sits there pulling down the signal from the satellite.
Okay.
And you can get a 4G version, which runs, if you're in this area all the time,
mm-hmm.
The Rochester environs have very good 4G coverage. But
okay.
You should check that out before you buy.
Well, I have a Verizon cell phone, so the...
Well, and that's when, that's something that other people are doing now, too, is that a lot of the smartphones have Wi-Fi hotspot built into them.
Oh, I don't have a smartphone.
Yeah, you can use your smartphone to create your Wi-Fi signal for your computers and not need to buy a second device for Wi-Fi on your computers.
Okay, now the other question. IE. Internet Explorer, absolutely hate it.
Mm-hmm.
But I was told I can't take it off my computer because it uses it for
other
programs.
It's coded in there.
But you can ignore it and use something
better. Yeah, just take it off your desktop. Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I'm just trying to think of ways. I keep getting this thing up that says low disk space. I'm running, let me see, you are running very low on disk space on local disk C.
Have you cleaned out the temp files?
I've done that.
In the cache, in the trash. There's a disk.
The problem is with the Lenovo, I have a D file, which actually has 60.5 gigs free.
Oh.
But it's limited on how much stuff I can put on there. I can't take
because it's
off
a, it's
local.
A,
yeah, your hard drive has been partitioned into two pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I went to a shop here in Greece, a computer shop.
Mm-hmm.
And they told me that they could not merge the two disks.
Correct.
Because Lenovo has some weird encryption in there.
Well, what it is see, they put the restore files in that other section.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not necessarily. Sometimes they give you a C drive and a D drive for data, and there's a second drive or sometimes even a third partition that's your restore data.
Are you using Windows 7?
Pardon?
Are you using Windows 7?
Vista.
Just,
and there's 60 gigs free on that second drive?
Yep, 60.5 GB.
So that sounds like they made
104 GB.
It sounds like they made a second partition for data.
Yeah.
So what happens is your C drive is full, your G drive is empty, and it's very annoying.
There should
be a way to merge those together.
Well, but one thing you can do is move the page file, the swap file, over to that D drive instead of keeping it on the C drive.
Yeah. That'll help.
I have no idea what you were just talking about.
Well, here's the thing.
Foreign language.
Right.
One of the things that takes up a lot of space on your C drive is the swap file.
Right. What happens is when Windows only has a finite amount of memory,
mm-hmm.
but sometimes you want to load multiple programs at the same time, and so what Windows will do is swap some of the unused pieces of what you're doing out to disk space.
Okay.
And that's called the swap space.
Mm-hmm.
And that is often two or three times the amount of memory. And now you have to hold on because we're going to take a quick break, but we'll come back to you, Marcia. Do not hang up.
Okay.
We'll take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, Marcia from Greece, and you. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be right back. And thank you again for all those of you who were generous enough to become members of the Soundbites family right here on Member Supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And on the line, we have Marcia.
And I'm Marcia.
Greece. And I'm Marcia. Well done, Marcia. Well done. What we have found is a page that will help you. See, basically, here's the deal. Well, I've already said that Windows will move bits and pieces of itself off to disk to make room for the thing you're doing right now.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you can multitask more things that are in memory. Now, the problem is that file is often fairly huge.
Mm-hmm.
So if we can move that file from the C drive, which I suspect is small, to the D drive, which you said is 60 gig.
Well, D drive is actually 104. I got 60 available.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
So if we can move that over to there, then you gain some space.
Okay.
Now, Steve has put up a link about that on our website. So if you go and click on the thing that says the links from today's show. You'll see that there, and you want to read that very thoroughly before you decide whether or not that's something you want to play around with on your own.
Okay.
But if you do that, what you'll end up with is however big that file was, you'll have more of that space on...
Available on the C.
Right, on the C drive.
The other thing you can do is move your user folder to that D drive. So all of your user files end up on the D drive, and you keep your C drive just for the operating system. And we've posted a link for that as well. Now, you manually, when you save a file, you can manually put it on the D drive, but you have to remember to manually do that every time.
Okay.
And this tip will automatically put your user folder. So My Documents ends up on that D drive.
Now, I have something on here called, the name says FaceProv, FaceProv. I have face recognition on this.
Okay.
IdeaPad. But it's showing 8,000 gigabytes.
That can't possibly be right.
Okay.
8,000 gigabytes? That's more than...
8,000 megabytes?
Yeah. No, kilobytes.
Oh, 8,000 kilobytes?
Yeah.
Oh, that's tiny.
Yeah, that's tiny.
Oh, okay.
8,000 kilobytes is okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's small.
Now, what's the website again?
Steve is putting up a link on our website.
Go to soundbites.org.
SoundBytes, right?
You got it. .org.
.org.
And on that page,
mm-hmm.
You'll find a link. Across the top is some tabs, home, contact, links.
Mm-hmm.
And if you click on links, one of those links, number six, is the list of sites mentioned weekly on the show.
Okay.
And if you click on that, you'll see a list. And by date, of course, is today's stuff. And Steve is putting that. Move the Windows swap file to another volume.
Okay.
Move the Windows users file to another volume. We can also put one up about how to move the the temporary folder.
Okay.
To another volume. So those will all be up, and give it about 10 minutes before they're all up there.
Okay.
Like I said, don't just start clicking on things. Read through all of those. Make sure you understand them. If you don't feel like you want to be involved in that,
right.
Then you can bring it to Dave or Steve or any reputable dealer and have them do that for you.
Well, I went to one and they didn't help me. So they right. charged me $30 to tell me that they couldn't.
Yeah, really?
The two.
Really?
And
see, I need to be. I need to be in that business.
No. If I can't,
I'm
do
sorry,
it.
I can't help you. Give me $50.
No.
Yeah, they weren't really. Familiar with Lenovo's to start with, so
well, it has nothing to do with the Lenovo and everything to do with Vista itself.
Yes,
yeah.
I'm sorry, I should not be rude.
No, thank you
for not mentioning the name of the place.
Yes,
we don't
please.
Want to get anybody in trouble.
No,
thank you though.
You notice I'm being very quiet about the name.
Yeah, and well, you should. Thank you, Marcia.
Okay, thank you very much for your help.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Bye bye.
And we should answer that other question we got from Jason from Altoona.
Yep. Go ahead, tell us what that question was, because you're the one reading the...
All right, the story is about the Allen Array. Is it going to affect the... how are you pronouncing it again?
Arecibo.
Thank you. It's so damn small here in type. Operations as well. Jason's from Altoona, Pennsylvania. That is his question.
Yeah, the Arecibo telescope is the giant telescope built in the side of a mountain in Puerto Rico, a 600-foot diameter
radio telescope. Right. It's a totally different funding source, so I suspect that the actual impact will be minimal.
There was a FAQ on the original page. Let me see if I can find that again. Frequently asked questions where they said that the other telescopes aren't affected at the moment. But each facility has their own budget and their own funding, so it's difficult to be able to know what's going to happen later.
And I have to say,
the Arecibo was down for a long time for maintenance. Yeah. In fact, my SETI at home wasn't running for a while because there was no data coming to
it. Right, mine too. Right. What's interesting is I'm on the SETI at home website, setiathome.berkeley.edu, and apparently the closure of the Allen Array doesn't really affect the SETI at home project. While some of our projects, Fly's Eye Experiment, have used the ATA, SETI at home doesn't use any data from ATA. We also don't currently receive any funding from the SETI Institute and are not affected by their budget. So the SETI Institute and SETI at home are two entirely different entities. And that's kind of nice. So the ATA requires about $1.5 million a year for operation and another $1 million a year to support the SETI Institute science programs. $2.5 million sounds like a lot, but the cost of one FA-18 jet could fully fund that for 23 and a half years. So it's interesting to discover that this has nothing to do with the SETI Institute. It's not going to shut down the SETI Institute. It's just shutting down the array, and it has nothing to do with SETI at home. So those of us who are helping to support SETI at home by using our compute power to help them decode what's coming over the data that they're receiving, we're not going to be affected in any way.
And the Allen Array is actually going into hibernation, which is a step above being shut down. They keep the critical components powered and healthy, so they could turn it back on again. But at some future point,
It still will cost a decent amount of money to do that.
Yeah.
All right. Our next caller is our friend Bon Vibra from Buffalo, New York. How are you, Scott?
I'm doing fine. Can you hear me over the speakerphone?
I can.
This might interest you. Last Wednesday's South Park show.
Oh yeah.
Featured. People who don't read terms of agreement.
The moral of the story was read your license before you click agree.
On the Apple iPad. And it was really quite funny, if not a bit risque.
Well, at South Park, it'll be both funny and risque.
It was a parody of Steve Jobs, the iPad, the iTunes license agreements, and a 2010 Dutch horror film called The Human Centipede.
Oh, yes.
And so, of course, on South Park, it was the human iPad.
Very nice. And now we know Scott's taste in television.
Oh, yes.
And Steve's.
Yep.
That's all I had to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Scott. We appreciate it.
They wanted a
the members of the Soundbites family. Thank you very much.
Yep. They wanted an iPad that could read. And through the whole episode, they kept asking Kyle, to agree to this, and he kept just clicking agree. You didn't read it. This says we can do anything we want to you. You know, we're doing surgical experiments on you because you clicked agree.
Nobody reads the end user license agreement anymore. Nobody does. Nobody has.
It was a great scene on the playground when he complains that they're going to do this to him, and all the kids look at him blankly, and he's. What, you read the license agreement? Every kid said, well, yeah, sure, you have to.
Yeah, right.
And then he goes to his dad, who's an attorney, and so what happens if you agree to something you didn't mean to? Well, when you read the agreement, you're supposed... What if you didn't read it? You didn't read the agreement?
See? Well, my favorite of the people who said to me, hey, I heard this thing about this agreement.
Yeah.
Is it true? I don't know. Did you read it? All you have to do is read it. All the end user license agreements are available in various places, so don't ask me if it says this. All you have to do is read it yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I realize there are people who don't read. I get that. But you know, instead of waiting a week for me to answer a question.
It is 47 pages. So Butters is reading it, and he gets down to the page 37. And you agree to let us use you for medical experimentation. And Butters goes, I'm just going to click deny.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I read all the license agreements the first time. And I know they change, and that's something I should do. I should read them more often. But... the reality is that there are some things in license agreements that you may not agree with, and you have to then decide whether or not that's something you actually want to do, or not.
And they had a giant map in the background of everyone's location in the world, right now.
Yeah.
The one amazing thing about South Park is they are so topical. You know, the iPhone user data leak was, what, 2 weeks ago it came out, and they've already got a South Park about it.
Yep.
And it's not just the iPhone. Every phone does it. Your ATM does
right,
it. Your Wegmans
right.
shopper's card does it.
Right. Right. But you know what? The thing is, and this just points it up to me, people expect Apple to be better. And the reality is they're not.
Yeah.
They're just like everybody else. All right. That's it. That music tells me that you have wasted two more hours of your life. That is 2 hours of your life you will never get back. And you have spent it listening to this show. And once again, we want to thank you for having done so, and particularly those of you who have been so generous over the last few weeks and have become members of the Soundbites family here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Again, I can't tell you how much it means to me. I really, really, we all do. We appreciate what you've done, and we thank you for your generosity. And we're done for another week. See you next time on Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Here are the club calendar highlights for Saturday.